Learn from today's most innovative brands and observe how they empower employees, engage consumers, design products, and co-create experiences together. Welcome to the Brand Lab series from AE Marketing Group.
Hi, everyone. It's Brian Walker of the Brand Lab series podcast, where each week we broadcast from 1871 Chicago and explore today's most innovative brands alongside today's most insightful executives and entrepreneurs. This week, we're super excited to have back Howard Tolman. Howard is the CEO of 1871, and our conversation today will focus on leadership. So with that said, let's enter the Brand Lab. So Howard, welcome back to the Brand Lab series.
I'm happy to be back.
Yeah, thank you. Last time
it's been a while.
It has. Last time you were kind enough to share some of your wisdom on entrepreneurship. For today's episode, I'd love to talk just a little bit about leadership. Why don't we start from the fact that you've worn a number of hats over the years across a lot of industries throughout your career, and talk a little bit about maybe how that shaped you to where you are today.
I've definitely gotten older, but I don't think I've become any more mature. So I think that, that it hasn't worked as well as it should. I should have been much more patient by now and clearly less intemperate. But the funny thing is, sometimes I look back after 50 years, which is almost impossible to believe, and the core ideas, the core sort of concepts that I wrote about in, 1980 maybe, 1975, they haven't changed very much. I mean, it's really very interesting. I would say that in some very modest respects, I've added some sort of new considerations, but the fundamental things that I think are important in terms of leading, in terms of building a business, in terms of building a team, all of those things, honestly, it's been the same story in probably 16 businesses now since 1980. So,
I didn't realize that we were both born in St. Louis.
Yeah.
Reading up on you, I saw that you started your entrepreneur thing at the ripe age of 10.
Yeah.
So over the course of all these years, did you have a job that really stuck out as one that you really loved, or looking back, maybe one that you're like, wow, I hated that job?
Well, so I always say that I love the job I'm doing now, the most, because that's like, why wouldn't you say that, We had this meeting yesterday with one of our startups was pitching about 9 executives from a giant corporation, including one of the most senior guys there. And the guy in his pitch says, so tell me, all of you hate parts of your job. And I said, wait a minute, let's review the meeting here. We got their bosses sitting in the room, Do we really want to say, why don't we rephrase that? So do you know somebody at your company who doesn't like their job? That might be a little smarter question to ask, but it was funny. In terms of jobs that I hated, I think actually most jobs I've been really fortunate to enjoy and to be my own boss, which is a huge thing that makes it a little easier to like what you're doing. But I do remember driving the tractor at a golf range and having to be the guy who picked up the balls. You drive around
while
they were shooting at you. Exactly right.
Did you ever get used to that?
Or they were trying to hit. Well, I had a cage. It wasn't a great cage, but it was some protection. So
okay.
Yeah.
So obviously, you've been CEO here of 1871 for 3 years now, and you said it's the job that you enjoy the most. Talk about what makes a good leader today as you look across not just your organization, but all the companies here at 1871.
I think the first job of a leader is to set out a vision. And then I think the second job is to show people how to get there, a path so that it's realistic. I think that it's hard to size is a really interesting thing. I'd say 75% of entrepreneurs will not make it in the CEO role beyond 50 to 100 employees, and then virtually none will make it past about 300 employees. So it's a really interesting thing, and you have to want to lead by example, and you also have to want to take on all of the responsibilities. One of the things that's surprising, and we talked, I think, last time about what's good and what's bad about being an entrepreneur. I think very few people understand when they say, I'm going to start a company, all of the things that that entails. And, whether it's learning to file W-2s or worrying about taxes or accounting or all these things that, I just want to do what I like to do, that's not the deal. It's a package deal. And so being a leader, you have to really have a tolerance for the fact that a significant portion of your time is going to be doing things that need to get done and need to get done well and paid attention to, but that aren't what you would call stimulating or exciting or, the kind of way that you'd like to be spending your time.
Yes. I unfortunately learned that the hard way last year with our pensions and our 401ks.
Yeah.
Far more time with tax attorneys and the IRS than I would have liked. When you think about the entrepreneur mindset, though, do you think it's hard for a true entrepreneur to kind of be a manager?
Yeah, it is. It is hard. I think that a very small portion of entrepreneurs sort of mature into managers. And it's only partially mature. It's also whether they want to do it. Management is about, consistent performance and the delivery of things on a recurring basis. And entrepreneurs are much more interested in new things and adding to the mix and trying new and different things. So those are two different skill sets. I mean, this is something that's happening in our country between jobs that require consistent error-free performance, which I would say is a surgeon, and jobs that require creativity. I think the truth is no one goes to a surgeon and says, I hope you figure out some really new clever thing to do this time around. You want them to do the exact same thing that's been successful for the last 200 patients that lived and not experiment on you. Those jobs, not at the surgeon level, but at the performance level for so many industries, are going away. I mean, they're going away because if I can build an instruction set and some rules, eventually a robot can do that job. The creative jobs are the ones that, hopefully will preserve and that will present opportunities for us going forward. But, I think it's hard to want to be a day-to-day manager, and it's hard to be a successful manager for an entrepreneur, for somebody with that specific sort of bent and mindset.
Well, one of the other things that I've seen, especially the last year as a mentor across the hall at the Bunker Labs, is that entrepreneurs, surprisingly, I think don't always handle success as well as people on the outside looking in would think. But I think, as we talked before, the success is the sexy part that a lot of people talk about. But has there been a disappointment either in your role here at 1871 or maybe in your investment portfolio role or just something that stuck out at you that didn't go according to plan? And how'd you overcome that?
Well, disappointment is an interesting word. I'm not disappointed because some ideas don't work out. I'm not disappointed because we lose some money, trying to do whatever we were trying to do. I think the biggest disappointments we've had have been around integrity and honesty. I mean, I think we've had one instance and I can think of where, honestly, we just learned after the fact that the entrepreneur was just a liar and, or worse. And that's pretty discouraging. That's pretty unfortunate. And a lot of people were victimized. Again, to me, it wasn't the dollar and cents thing. It was that a lot of people had signed up for that business and worked for that business and really put their heart into it. And to discover that, he was just a bad actor was really a bad, and sort of a disappointing situation. And, those are going to happen. I think that, being smart in this world is not about making all the right decisions. It's about learning from the good ones and the bad ones and learning what to look out for. And, the one thing you really can't look out for is someone who's just out and out dishonest. And, all you can do, this is a pretty small community. I know that nobody is going to make that mistake again with this individual. But other than that, I think that in most cases, as long as we feel we've done our homework and in most cases, as long as we feel that the people have done their best and given it all their energy and tried, then I'm never disappointed. I think that's just part of the cost of building new businesses.
So kind of to build on that a little bit from a slightly different angle, you hear a lot of isms around startup life, entrepreneur life, some around failure, others around this whole fake it till you make it mantra. Do you really think people can fake it until they make it?
No, I really don't. I think that you can only lie to yourself for a certain amount of time. But I also think that what we're seeing is that the whole idea of lean startups isn't working either, because the market just has too many choices now to just try and create something and throw it out there and hope it finds people that are interested in it. I think you have to reverse the process and do your homework first and find a real pain point and people willing to pay who value the solution enough to pay you a living amount of money so you can build a business around it. And then you can start to build a product, and then you can certainly iterate it. But the thought that people are going to build stuff here and then in 6 months throw it over the transom and, the field of dreams kind of thing, I think that the world is just getting too smart for that. So I think everybody is learning that there's more data available. So I think we all just ask harder questions than we used to. And I think we're more inclined to say when somebody says, I have 60,000 users, to say, well, tell me the number of average daily users and a couple of other questions, because these businesses are rarely about volume or sheer numbers. They're really about momentum. And so if you have 60,000 theoretical users and only 5,000 of them, appear twice a month, it's a different set of sort of metrics and a different kind of business than other businesses. So, I think it's really hard to do anything like this except to do it the right way and to do it for real.
Well, one of the things that makes being part of this ecosystem here great is mentors. There's a whole chalkboard full of mentors. I've used a lot. I mentor other folks as well. Do you have mentors?
I think that I have some people that I like to run things by from time to time. So I guess that to me, a mentor is slightly different than that, but I do have a group of people whose opinions I value and who I ask about difficult decisions.
So if someone were to look to you as a mentor, how do you, and maybe there is no easy way to do this, I talked to Todd Connor at the Bunker Labs about this a lot in a prior episode, how do you tell somebody maybe that their dream is not a good idea? Or do you not? Or I know he was really gun-shy about doing something like that, but when you know someone comes to you for advice, and you know, boy, this idea just isn't going to be a good business. How do you do that?
Well, I think that there are very few ideas which are sort of demonstrably dumb, and those are easy. I mean, I think those are, those don't probably get through the door to have those kinds of conversations. I think the bigger question is if there's only a tiny number of really dumb ideas, there's a huge number of businesses that aren't either viable or scalable. And so that's the conversation that we have. And usually that conversation resolves itself around opportunity cost, which is to say, here's the amount of progress your business has made. Here's the amount of resources you've put into it. And you're at a junction where you have to decide whether it's a good use of our resources, your time, your investors' money, to keep going, or whether now is a good time to think about doing something different, because you only have X number of at-bats. And if this one isn't going to work, you want to, clean up or do whatever it is to resolve the situation so you can get on with your life. And I think that that's a frank conversation that we have on a relatively recurring basis with different companies. Sometimes it's made easier because if they can't raise additional financing, it almost doesn't matter in terms of longevity. But sometimes they can, or sometimes they've raised a war chest, but they're not really building a business that's doing anything other than sort of churning through a lot of customers, or they don't have a selling proposition that's unique and sustainable. And, that's our job. Our job is not to hurt their feelings, but to frankly talk to them about what success looks like and how they're doing.
So let's switch gears for a little bit. You have a lot of passions outside of business. Education is one, clearly arts is another. You have an amazing art collection, just not on the walls here, but in some other places, not just around the city and elsewhere. How did that all come about?
Well, I think, so I've been collecting for probably 45 years or so. And I think when I started, they were actually peers. And I thought that since I had a real job and they were trying to be starving artists and were doing a really good job of the starving part, that it would be important for me to support what they were doing by buying their art. And that's actually where it started. And then at some point it morphed to feeling, because I was building schools and doing other things that were highly technical and highly digital, that it would be great to have everybody in this technical world be surrounded by other examples of excellence and sort of a demonstration that there were other ways that you could create things and it wasn't all sterile and it wasn't all digital, because it can get very cold if everybody is just sitting in front of a monitor and sort of tapping on their keyboard. So the art is intended to show people that there's a lot more in the world going on and to create an environment that is stimulating in different ways beyond simply the day-to-day stimulation that we get.
Do you have a favorite here at 1871?
No, I don't think I do. I always say that, I mean, we have thousands of pieces of art at this point, and so it's hard to say. The good thing is that I can't think of maybe more than out of maybe 2,000 pieces, I can't think of more than two or three that we wouldn't buy again, and that's astonishing.
Very.
But it's because we also, you know, we're pretty picky, and we also don't look at or buy stuff that isn't sort of within a pretty narrow window.
So further along the path of kind of stepping away from business for a minute, you know, we've talked a lot about technology over the last two episodes. Clearly, it's all around us. But with that also comes the constant connectivity. How are some ways that Howard personally, disconnects?
Well, so I think the only time that I disconnect is when I'm writing, and then I do sort of shut everything else down. And that's so I can hear my sort of language. And I find that I can't have any music or other distractions to really pay attention to, you know, how those sentences are going to sound and sort of the thoughts that they're going to communicate. So that's sort of a combination of relaxation and isolation, and it's really a time that's about the only time that I really sort of disconnect.
Well, I'm glad that you do that, because I enjoy reading your ink contributions as well as a few other things in between. So as we wrap up, just kind of a final question. You're obviously high profile, a well-known business and philanthropist. What's one thing that people would probably be surprised to know about you that they wouldn't?
I think that I actually prefer to talk to 500 people than to talk to 5 people. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because 500 people are unlikely to ask you a 14-minute question about how you can advise them on their entire life and future and their business and 4,000 other things. So it's a little easier to, when you're addressing a crowd, to share your wisdom and not have to actually be accountable for individual consultations. And I think that the other thing is, I think that it's hard to understand. I mean, I'm 71. It's hard to understand how anybody would still be excited about doing this stuff at that advanced age. But I am, and I think that it's because it's really important to create a place where the future can get built and where we can do everything possible to make businesses successful, because it helps the businesses, it helps this enterprise, but it helps the city and the country in really important ways. And that's why I still harbor, you know, some hopes that we can use technology to improve the education space and the health space, because, you know, we just really don't need 6 more dating sites for dogs or cats or any kind of, you know, social media for I don't know what. But we do need to cure some of these recurring, really horrendous problems in our cities, in our country. And technology is going to be the only way we're going to do that. It's not going to happen because we hope for it. It's going to happen because we built it.
Well, Howard, thank you so much. You're busy. You're a fast-moving guy. And apparently I know now that we're similar to the fact that I would much rather prefer to give talks to large audiences than have small conversations as well. So the fact that you sat down with us for a good bulk of your time to have that in-depth conversation, I super appreciate it.
Well, I'm happy to do it. And the Big Gulp was undoubtedly an incentive that I didn't even realize. So I'm happy to have been here.
Well, I appreciate that. And I appreciate your support when we were named to the Inc. 5000 and some of the other stuff that you and the whole leadership team here has done for us as we've been a member for about a year now. So thank you.
Great.
I want to thank our listeners for joining us in the Brand Lab today. And to invite you back next Tuesday as we continue our journey of today's most innovative brands, as we learn how they empower employees, engage consumers, design products, and co-create experiences together. To listen to other Brand Lab Series podcast episodes, visit brandlabseries.com. Follow us on Twitter at Brand Lab Series. And if you have any questions or ideas for a future Brand Lab Series podcast, email us at info@brandlabseries.com.